Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. The primary election results are in. Two Valley natives will advance to the fall election for a Picken County Commissioner seat. And in Garfield County, a candidate will be serving his sixth term as a commissioner. In the Colorado congressional race for the 3rd District, it's going to get interesting between Democrat Gail Schwartz and Republican Scott Tipton.
I think it's going to get real nasty. You can tell just by the tone of Tipton's attacks on her.
And a conversation about the Picken County Commissioner race last week on the show was tainted by a guest who failed to disclose his active campaigning for one of the candidates.
It's a pretty clear line that if you have a position at a newspaper, a news position anywhere along the line, whether you're a reporter or a columnist, you shouldn't be actively working on behalf of a campaign.
It's been said that all politics are local. And with the Aspen Ideas Festival in full swing here this week, politicos from around the world share their thoughts. Finally, the makeup of Carbondale's Board of Trustees could change this fall, now that there is at least one challenger for the mayor's seat.
Ed Cortez, who used to be a Carbondale trustee and is the head of the RAFTA Drivers Transit Union, said he was going to run.
Joining me this week are Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Andy Stone, former editor of the Aspen Times, and now a columnist, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Welcome to the studio, and Randy on the phone down in Glenwood.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
So we had an election this week, and I was actually kind of surprised by the outcome in Picken County. I thought that it was going to end up being a face-off between Hawk Greenway and Greg Poschman. And I'm not sure why, other than Scott Ryder has lost a few elections in the past, and he didn't raise any money, so I didn't think he was that serious. And it just seemed like the debate with Squirm Knight was more between Hawk and Greg. What do you think, Curtis?
I think Scott attracts a whole different constituency, and Hawk and Greg were fighting over a lot of the same voters, whereas Scott had his voters. Scott talks about making affordable housing resemble the free market a little bit more. You know, he has a development background. He tends to be he portrays himself as an independent, whereas the other folks are Democrats. So he attracts a little bit of a different constituency. And, you know, he ran for city council a few years back and did pretty well. I believe he came in third or fourth place got a lot of votes. And
I think there's a lot of,
you know, he's a great guy. Like, he's super friendly. He's out there in the community. He's a very engaging person. So I actually was not surprised by that outcome. That was how a lot of people in our newsroom called it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. He's got a standing constituency, so he doesn't really need to campaign a whole lot. Certainly not at this level to get his share of the vote. He may need to in the general election, but again, of course, Greg Poschman represents a large, long-standing sector of the community. He's been here, his family's been here for a while, and he's got a support of a lot of people who have been here for a while. So he's got that built-in support. So
I think Greg put the most, he had the most professional campaign out of the three.
Yes.
I think Hawk just kind of thought, because he'd been on the open space board for nearly 20 years, that would, he could kind of ride that. But it turned out that was almost like a poison pill.
Let's remember, too, that 11,800 ballots went out and 2,700 came back.
Yeah.
So was a pretty low.
Great job, voters.
Yeah. So it's not hardly a mandate, so Hawk shouldn't feel that bad.
Yeah.
And the voter turnout in Garfield County wasn't much better, Randy, right?
No, we didn't have tremendous turnout here. And probably the race that was watched most closely was the primary election challenge to John Martin, our longtime county commissioner. He won very easily, probably more easily than was initially expected. I also was really kind of personally interested in the, or not personally, but professionally interested in how the Tipton primary challenge came out to the 28-year-old underfunded upstart, Alex Weinstein. He got trounced, which is not surprising, and then Tipton has turned his guns real quickly to Gail Schwartz, which it's clear he's going to run against her as an Aspen elitist. Do you think she is?
An Aspen elitist?
Yeah.
Well, she's got an Aspen connection. I don't think that automatically makes her an elitist.
Tipton's holding fundraisers over here, too, just like her. So,
one of his
biggest, you know, he has plenty of donors from the Upper Valley.
It's going to be an interesting race. You know, there's going to be a lot of rhetoric.
I think it's going to get real nasty. You can tell just by the tone of Tipton's attacks on her.
I wanted to ask you, Randy, the issue with John Martin is there's no term limits in Garfield County for commissioner seat, so. Do you have any idea what term this would be for him?
This would be his sixth term. I've heard and not verified that if he finishes this term, he would be the longest serving county commissioner in state history. He told me that we had a letter to the editor that asserted, he said the last time that he ran that would be the last time. I asked him, he said, no, I said it would be difficult to run again, but this is it. This is the last time.
And so, is the salary the same as what it is in Pitkin County? It's $72,000 base plus benefits, I think.
That is my belief. I've been told that there's...
It's a state legislature decision that was made maybe two terms ago, maybe 8 years ago, or a little bit less. And so, I mean, John's not doing it for the money, I would presume, because he was serving before it became that really nice amount.
But that makes it a little easier to hang on for your fifth and sixth terms when it turns out to be a pretty good job.
Sure. And I wonder if the Garfield County commissioner job is a little bit more substantive than a Pitkin County, just because you have so much oil and gas industry issues to deal with and the I-70 corridor and all that.
Well, you know, the county commission here is pretty powerful, in part because of the money that they have from being so frugal, and they are able to provide a lot of grants and do some infrastructure work. If you've driven Highway 82, the county is paying in full for the acceleration lanes and other work that they're doing right now around Cattle Creek, which is, 7 miles south of Glenwood. And it's just really influential in the county, whereas I think there might be a little bit more cooperation and give and take between the Pitkin County and Aspen. It's a little bit smaller county too. We've got, you know, diverse lot of geography here to cover. So the county commissioners here have a lot of weight.
Yeah.
There's also only three of them in Garfield County compared to five in Pitkin County. So I feel like whenever you have three people, that just each one of those positions is that much more powerful.
Right.
And John, you know, he's been in the job so long and he knows the county so well physically, and he's a super smart guy. He'll let you know that. And, you know, he has a lot of influence because of that background and his ability to really provide history, context, and so forth.
Going back to the Pitkin County race, I need to address some things that were said on the show last week. I had Mick Ireland, he's a columnist for the Aspen Daily News and a former Politico for many years as a county commissioner and the mayor of Aspen. And he made some comments that were related to a debate that was held by the two newspapers between Scott Ryder, Greg Poschman, and Hawk Greenway. And while the comments weren't made directly to support Hawk, It was brought to my attention by the people behind Greg's campaign that Mick, in fact, was helping Hawk in his campaign. So I asked him after the fact, and he said yes, that he was, in fact, actively campaigning for Hawk. And he didn't disclose that to me, which I would have not allowed the conversation to go any further. And I feel like that eroded the credibility of the show a little bit. So I wanted to at least state that and have you guys opine about where the line is and where you ought to disclose. And especially if he's still a columnist writing about politics, shouldn't he be saying that publicly?
Well, I think, for me at least, it's a pretty clear line that if you have a position at a newspaper, a news position anywhere along the line, whether you're a reporter or a columnist, you shouldn't be actively working on behalf of a campaign. I think that pretty much is where the line is drawn.
And even if you're a columnist.
Even if you're a columnist, you can. I mean, I know, you know, one can quibble about this because, in fact, as columnists, we may express our opinions in favor of a candidate. But expressing an opinion in favor of a candidate is still a long way from actively working on that candidate's campaign. And as far as I'm concerned, and as I understand the rules, that's where that line is supposed to be drawn.
You know, that's tough because I think Mick is a very good political analyst. I think he understands politics. He's been a columnist for us now for 4 years or so, and I think he adds a lot to the opinion page. I don't know. I think we at least need full disclosure at the very least. But, you know, Mick has always done this. He's gotten involved on behalf of candidates that he is in support of and helps them run their campaigns. So.
Right.
Well, there are some jobs you're just not supposed to hold at the same time.
Curtis, you had said in an email, you know, you agreed that he contributed to that conversation last week. It was a conversation.
I thought it was a good analysis. But, yeah, then once you find out he had been knocking on doors,
right,
it feels a little tainted.
Right. When I asked him about this, he wrote back and said, we're all biased and that everybody in the room voted for one of the three and we just didn't disclose who we were supporting. And it's a weak argument because, yeah, I voted, but I keep it out of my coverage.
Yeah, that's
and my
just
comments.
Not the way the rules work. That's all.
And vote, a columnist with an opinion or anyone voting is different from someone out actively campaigning on behalf of a candidate.
Right.
I think Mick knows better than that. Mick's a pretty sharp guy, and he's got a great political mind, and I think he should know better.
Well, it didn't. If he was trying to do something, it didn't work. Randy, have you ever run into this? What's your policy when you were
had,
in Des Moines? And
Kathy Trotter wrote a monthly column for us. It's kind of she has a blog called Our Town Glenwood Springs, and she's got great affection for the community. But when she announced her candidacy for city council, we dropped the column. And then Alan Harvey, who's a Carbondale trustee, also had a monthly column. He used to work for the Aston Papers. And the understanding with him was that while he was campaigning, and it certainly didn't do him any good because he lost, but while he was campaigning that he wouldn't write about city issues. And, you know, it was also disclosed that he was a trustee in his signer. So I think the thing that I see, and it's all secondhand from where I am, that, you know, there was just a failure on Mick's part to disclose, which, as a community columnist, as opposed to an employee of the news organization, you know, you have to disclose your potential conflicts, and then if obviously employees have to follow the basic ethics of journalism. We used to, when I worked at the Des Moines Register, periodically newer employees would get upset that we wouldn't let them go to the caucuses unless they were covering them, because caucuses are not primaries. You don't vote at caucuses. Those are party organizing events. So we couldn't have our newsroom employees caucusing.
in the radio world, the FCC is very strict on, you know, equal time for candidates. So there was a little bit of a question last week, like, now do I have to get the other candidates on so they can have some airtime?
And I find, are the other candidates operatives?
Or, yeah. You know, and, but because this is a media roundtable, I made the executive decision that I did not. And plus, that conversation, again, it wasn't like, it wasn't straightforward, you know, pro-hawk. It was, it was kind of analyzing and critiquing in a negative way a little bit, I think, some of Greg's positions. You are listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Joining me this week in our analysis of local and national politics are Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post Independent, Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. There's a lot of politics happening around this valley, globally, nationally, and locally. We've had some heavy hitters in town, and the papers have done a pretty good job of covering a lot of those discussions at Aspen Ideas Festival. We've been doing a lot of live broadcasting, and we had Mitt Romney on the front page of Thursday's papers, basically saying he's not supporting either candidate for president, which I don't know if he had stated that or not publicly before.
Well, he certainly has not come out and said he'd be voting for Hillary, but he made that pretty clear.
Right.
It's funny, just how many of these Republicans are just going to stay home? Isn't that kind of a yeah. cop-out?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. Is there, of all your coverage, is there anything that's been stand out for you? I mean, I saw you at the Caitlyn Jenner conversation, which I was at, and we've had.
There's been a lot.
Kerry, John Kerry,
a lot of big names, and they've all been pretty interesting. I want to highlight a story that we had on Thursday. It was an early morning, 8 a.m. session. Colin Susick, our reporter, went and listened to Jason Rezian. Did I get that name right? Who was the Washington Post correspondent in Tehran who was imprisoned by the Iranian authorities for 18 months and was recently just had his gained his freedom in a prisoner swap deal negotiated by Secretary of State John Kerry. And he gave a presentation talking about what it's like to work as a journalist in one of these repressive societies where free expression is not allowed. And that sounded like that was a very interesting session. That was one of those little gems you see at the Ideas Fest where there probably weren't more than a couple dozen people in the room, and you're hearing from someone who has something really interesting to say.
Yeah, we have that marked on our agenda as something that we're going to broadcast. We've recorded it, so we're going to air that at some point so people can hear it. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of security in the next 2 days with Joe Biden being here on Saturday. And if anybody remembers him being here last year,
September 2014.
Right, September of 2014 for the Charlie Rose weekend, which was a private event. And I know it affected Garfield County all the way up here. He was in the presidential suite at the Jerome. So
not the vice
president. They don't
suite?
Have a vice president. You beat me, Andy.
Right? Yeah, they don't.
This is a chance for me to jump in and just say how irritating it is for me to hear local law enforcement complain about providing protection for a former secretary of state who's running for president or for the vice president of the United States. I mean, you know, for Lou Valario, for example, to complain about providing security for Hillary Clinton, I'd like to hear him say the same thing about a Republican. It's silly. It's something that you do. And I guess that's all I have to say.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. When I think it was the issue of Joe Biden being here, and it was a private event. That's why Sheriff DeSalvo up here had an issue. He's fine for when it's, I mean, he doesn't have any problem with Michelle Obama coming to ski. So
exactly.
I don't know what.
I mean, they tend to say, hey, it's a fellow law enforcement agency asking us for our help. That's what we do here.
Right.
They want to be reimbursed because, you know, you have to bring all your officers on and pay them overtime. I suppose that's fair. Right. But I'm with Randy. I mean, this is, you think this would be one of the reasons why you get into law enforcement in the first place, so you can provide security for the leaders of our nation.
Right. I mean, we've got, you know, half the cabinet here. You know,
well, I think that at least some people here believe that, you know, the terrorists are out to get us in every nook and cranny of the United States, and I'm sure that they are. So don't you provide protection to high-value targets? Come on.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you this. I had a run-in with John Kerry the other day. I was standing on the Cooper Avenue Mall, and I was arguing politics with a city employee. He was pissed off about his pension, and I was like going to walk away because I was like, I'm done with this conversation. But then he said something and made me turn around and go back and start talking to him. And I looked to the west and I see 12 suits walking toward me. I'm like, somebody's coming. And then I saw that it was John Kerry. And so I was like, Mr. Kerry, I know your job's hard. Thank you for everything that you do. And then I went right up to him and said, can I get a photo? And I was going to go do a selfie. And one of the Secret Service agents grabbed the phone out of my hand, and he took the photo. But, you know, I put my arm around his waist, and he put his arm around my waist, and I'm thinking to myself, how do they know that I'm not some person that's been planted where I have a gun and I'm going to shoot him? I mean, I don't know how they obviously are smarter than we are on this, but...
Or not.
Right.
Or not,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It seems pretty lax. He's just strolling down... He did a kind of an S. He walked down the Cooper Mall, and then he went over to the Hyman and kind of weaved his way through.
To a certain extent, you can't protect against every conceivable threat that's out there.
I guess.
He could have been a crazy person with a dagger.
And Aspen does have to be one of the safer places on the planet for someone like John Kerry to walk around.
I don't know if he gets to do that in, you know, in Midtown Manhattan or... One more Ideas Fest topic?
Absolutely.
So...
I mean, it's a big deal.
I caught a little flack from the Laura Bush talk.
Yeah, so
yeah, I saw that.
Gavin Dahl, who has just arrived on the scene, he's the news director at KDNK, and I have to say, coming in a little hot there, Gavin. He sent you an email that was
It was a letter to the editor.
Right.
So Walter Isaacson, Aspen Institute CEO, interviews Laura Bush for an hour on Monday. She's, of course, the wife of former President George W. Bush.
Well, I knew that name was familiar.
if you remember him, he was president for 8 years, and he started two wars, one of which was the war in Afghanistan, which we are still fighting, and the entire topic of Laura Bush's talk, or the majority of it, was concerning the plight of women in Afghanistan and the challenges they face and coming out of, you know, decades of civil war and society where women just do not have equal rights. And, you know, I wrote the story. It was a pretty lighthearted story. You know, it was a very country club kind of atmosphere.
Yeah. It's Greenwald Pavilion. It's,
you know, the letter basically said, you totally let the Bush administration off the hook, and the reader would have no idea that Bush's foreign policy had anything to do with Afghanistan. And I kind of scratched my head a little bit. I'm like, well, I assume most readers know our troops are in Afghanistan because Bush sent them there. But there's also a fair point in there that, you know, her only political statement during that entire talk was, don't pull the troops out. And so in a way, perhaps that was self-serving on her part to basically be promoting her husband's policy post, you know, after his presidency has ended. I don't know.
Was there any Q&A on that?
Not from the audience.
Okay, was the moderator on this?
Yeah,
then?
Yeah. So this is really, I think his beef is with the moderator, because never once was there a question from Isaacson that concerned anything.
Walter Isaacson, the CEO of the Aspen Institute.
That concerned anything about any of the negative or perceived negative legacies of the Bush presidency, which, of course, many people see that as a pretty bad spot in American foreign policy, especially nothing related to the Bush foreign policy ever came up. And it almost makes you wonder, it's like, is that an agreement? Is this like Iran? Like, you can't cross that line? I mean, I could tell you in that tent in the Laura Bush talk, the entire audience, however many hundred people were in there, were waiting for some sort of political question. whether it was about the Bush legacy, whether it was about Trump, and it never came. And it was just kind of hanging at the very end. The last question Walter Isaacson said was, here's what everyone has been waiting for me to ask, sort of like propping it up as a joke. He's like, how's your mother doing? You know, that was it. And everyone was kind of like,
right.
We're super polite to first ladies and former first ladies, right?
Yeah,
we are. And, you know, as we should be, because
except Hillary Clinton.
Except Hillary Clinton. But they're not the politicians.
Let's bring it back to local politics. Things are moving down in Carbondale with the mayorship. Sounds like
it was an interesting day on Tuesday. Ed Cortez, who used to be a Carbondale trustee and is the head of the RAFTA Drivers Transit Union, said he was going to run for mayor, which is up in November because Stacey Burnett moved from town. So Dan Richardson, who is a new Carbondale council member and mayor pro tem, so he became mayor after, a week on the board of trustees, jumped in and said, I'll run too. That'll be an interesting race, and of course other people could still get into it. Ed, I think, represents sort of grassroots workers, having been on the board before, maybe the past of Carbondale politics, although he's pro-development. And Dan certainly represents the newer, he'll be mad at me, I'll say somewhat more elitist or...
The energy fee
crowd.
Yeah, I'll
just leave it at that. More the, you know, group of residents in town. I think that'll be interesting. He was in favor of the... carbon tax. He was in favor of the infrastructure tax, which I supported myself, and I think that it was really hurt by the carbon tax, and it was actually much more needed. Carbondale is at a point of transition. You know, how does it retain its authenticity? How does it not become Aspen, Down Valley? How does it sort of keep its diversity and maintain some semblance of affordability and openness. That's going to be a good election.
And I was somewhat surprised also by that the other resignation from the Carbondale board this week. I thought that was somewhat strange. And the fellow who resigned wrote a letter. His letter of resignation explained how he had been out of town and had come back to Carbondale to serve because it was so important, and now he's leaving in the middle of his term because he wants to go study in Crestone. I found a little contradiction there. I thought it was a little strange to come all the way back because it was so important and then leave almost immediately.
Well, I think that captures the... I mean, A.J. Hobbs is a young guy who I believe is still finding himself, is a good way to put that, and... I think that what you said captures where he is in his life journey.
Right. Okay, on that note, we are out of time. So thank you for coming in, and Randy,
thank you.
Being on the phone.
A pleasure.
Thanks, Carolyn.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.